Welcome to Sweet Spots, where passions, purpose, and pursuits collide. I'm Sue Kelly, and for the next 30 minutes, I'll be shining a spotlight on someone who has created their unique sweet spot in life. This broadcast is coming to you from the Bay's satellite studio at the very cool sweet spot in Gravenhurst, the Sawdust City Brewery. We all want to be happy. It's the human condition to seek joy, to have serenity and well-being, and to feel upbeat and cheerful, at least most of the time. Mahatma Gandhi says that happiness is when what you think, what you say, and what you do are all in harmony. Happiness seems to be in the forefront of the media, Facebook, and many publications today, like the World Book of Happiness, the Happiness Project, and the Book of Awesome. There was even a World Happiness Report identifying the countries with the happiest levels of happiness. We've got Happy Birthday, Happy Hour, Going to Your Happy Place. And you might recall the song by Pharrell Williams, Happy, Happy, Happy. And there's a movie, too, where the producer searched the world for the secrets to life's greatest emotion. We don't need to search any further because I am fortunate to have in our studio today Peter Jennings, who searched the world to explore why being happy matters. Welcome, Peter.
Well, thank you, Sue, and I'm very happy to be with you today.
Excellent. So, Peter, what's your sweet spot?
Wow. You know what, Sue? That's a question I've never been asked. It's a great question, and I would have to say it's kind of a dual answer. Firstly, to be able to live in beautiful Muskoka is definitely my sweet spot, and secondly, to be able to write books that inspire my readers to enhance their lives. That's absolutely wonderful. So that's my sweet spot.
And I can totally agree with that. Your book, Why Being Happy Matters, and another book, Shark Assault, which we'll be talking about a little later in the show, really inspired me. I just wanted to use my highlighter and, you know, it would be well coated with don't forget these sweet spots in your books.
Well, that's great. Now, I have to ask you, what's your sweet spot? Is it based on your
goodness.
Book, Still Being Sexy After 60? Or
well, gee, nobody has asked me that, Peter. Well, you know, I agree with you. Being in Muskoka, this is like we're in paradise here. Mm-hmm. And being healthy. First of all, you know, as a nurse, I'm very grateful for my health, the love of my life, my husband and my family, and doing what I love to do. And neat. So I'm very grateful for that. So thank you, Peter, asking me. And Peter, you are a father, a grandfather, and you live in a log home on Lake Rosso.
Correct.
So tell us about your background and how you found your sweet spot here in Muskoka.
Well, my family has been cottaging in Muskoka for six generations. So we keep saying we're going to keep doing it until we get it right. So I kind of grew up here and spent all my summers here. I was born in Toronto and educated there and eventually spent a career in the field of corporate communications. Eventually doing marketing and advertising and that kind of thing. And throughout my career, I have always written. I've always loved writing from the time I was a little kid. But the fact of the matter was, in my career, I was always writing for other people, writing their brochures, writing their ad copy, writing their social media, websites, etc. So back in 2009, when I retired and moved to Muskoka, I thought, you know what, it's time to start writing for me. So I started writing books. And I've completed 3 books, and I'm working on 3 others, and keeps me out of the pool halls and off the streets. I'm having fun.
Wow, you sound like you sure are. Your book, Why Being Happy Matters, is awesome. I was inspired by the sad and devastating circumstances that many people endured, but still found happiness. Mm-hmm. And in fact, there are 37 stories, many well-known celebrities from all over the world, some ordinary folks, but you also interviewed 7 experts, some PhDs, and about the science of happiness. What was your process in researching the book?
Well, you know, Sue, people, prospective writers ask me about that. I say in a book like this, long before you are a writer, you're a reporter. You've got to do the drudgery. You've got to sort out who you're going to interview. And then, particularly in the case of celebrities or well-known people, you have to break through the walls of management and agents. It can take months to get one person. You have to be persistent. You have to be patient. and you have to do your research. But once you get them, if they agree, then that's where the real fun starts happening. You have to interview them, and what I do in terms of my process, I record all my interviews. That saves me from having to take notes with my terrible handwriting, and which I won't be able to read later. But it also allows me to kind of look at the person and have a conversation as opposed to writing down notes furiously. So I just set up, I got one of these little digital recorders. I set it up, I have a conversation, have my questions, and get the answers. And then I will go back, download what I want out of that, and begin turning it into an interview or a profile more. It's really a profile. So, you're right. I talked to 37 people from around the world. And in people say, you know, how did you pick the people? Well, again, it comes down to research. It comes down to going on the Internet. For instance, John Robbins, who famously walked away from the Baskin-Robbins empire, I just kept coming across John's name because he's the biggest blogger in the Huffington Post. He's a well-known speaker, a well-known author, and he just seemed like a genuinely happy guy. So I thought, okay, how am I going to get John?
You know, that's a great segue because actually I've highlighted three of your profiles, and John is my first one. Mm-hmm. And so I was interested to know that how he, you know, he walked away from that Baskin and Robbins dynasty.
Yeah.
And has a motivational message. So he said this: the problem in our culture is that we have been taught to use people and love things. True happiness is found in using things and loving people.
Isn't
that you comment on that?
Yeah, absolutely. John has many little epithets like that. He's truly a happy guy. And, he grew up, he was being groomed by his dad to take over a $1 billion industry, but he couldn't do it. And he told me, he said, Peter, 99.9% of the young men in the United States would have killed to have the opportunity
Absolutely.
I was being given. But he said, I couldn't do it. It was poisoning people's systems with foodstuffs that were not healthy. And he said, that made me very unhappy. And he said, I'm a guy who want to be happy. So he said, I said to my dad, no, I'm not doing this. That caused problems, Sue, between him and his father. But he had to stand up for happiness, and he did. And today he's a very happy guy. If I may, it was quite interesting because there was one question I wanted to ask him, but I wasn't sure whether I should go there, but I thought, the heck with it, I will. John had started making some money, even though that wasn't his aim, through all these books he was publishing, the speeches he was giving, the blogging he was doing with Huffington. And he had amassed a little bit of money, and he called a buddy of his in New York and said, what shall I do with this? And the guy said, send it to me. I will invest it for you, John, in safe instruments. Sadly, he put the entire amount with a Bernard Madoff, who you will recall ran the world's largest Ponzi scheme, currently a 150-year guest at the Butler Correctional Institute. And overnight, John Robbins was wiped out. But he is still a happy guy. He built his way back, and he said, you can't let things stop you. You can't let those things get you down. I'm still a happy guy.
So. That's amazing.
Yeah,
and there's other very intriguing elements of support for family, but we'll leave that to people who hopefully will buy your book, because it's just one. You know what I did? I love to read your book before I go to bed at night.
Mm.
So I just have it on my bedside table, and I would just take a story. And you know what? I just found it so happy that it just was so calming. And then off I go to La La Land.
Well, I'm delighted to hear that, because my goal with the book, Why Being Happy Matters, is to inspire people, but also to be a resource. I've got some resource elements in the book because I believe people can be happier. You know, the world is facing unbelievable elements of stress and anxiety right now. A lot of people aren't as happy as they should be. They may be happy, but they can be happier. And I hope this book will inspire them and also act as a resource for how to do that.
And I would agree. It's well written. It flows lovely. You tell such beautiful stories. And there's even a happy index. Now, I've got that wrong. It's mm-hmm. What do you call that at the end of each of your cases?
It's basically a scale between 1 and 10, and I ask people to rate themselves, 1 being not happy at all, 10 being kind of over the top, And people rated themselves and made a little comment. Actually, the most interesting guy was Chuck Lavelle. Most people, I'm sure, have heard of the Rolling Stones. Well, Chuck is the keyboardist for the Rolling Stones, who told me, "Peter, I am the happiest guy in the world." When I said, "Chuck, where are you in the 1 to 10 scale?" He said, "I'm 11.
Oh. Awesome.
Yeah.
And so another very interesting person you interviewed is Monica Schnarr.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of Canadians will know this supermodel who enjoyed fame and wealth, went to Los Angeles, and then chose to come back to Canada. And specifically to Muskoka to live her dream.
Yeah.
And Peter, you asked Monica, does anything get you down? And she replied, self-doubt, letting other people's negativity get a hold of me.
Mm-hmm.
Can you comment further?
Yeah, she is, Monica's a very positive person. In fact, I think most of the people that I interviewed are positive. That's part of their character. Some of them, as you've already indicated, Sue, some of them come from places that were really low or down. Some of them are just hardwired to be happy, and that's the way they're going to be. In Monica's case, she did not enjoy being this incredible, a young supermodel. I mean, took the world by force, made a ton of money and whatnot, but it's not a nice business. And she eventually wanted to get out of that. And I think, you know, when she talks about self-doubt and that sort of thing, she's reacting to the fact that so many young women, girls today, you know, see these beautiful models and they aspire to be there. I've got to lose pounds, or I've got to grow breasts, or I've got to do this with my hair, or whatever. And she's saying, you know, don't chase false ideals. Don't be so consumed with doubt about yourself. Believe in yourself. You don't have to look like a supermodel. Get on with life and be happy. And she's got a great attitude about that.
And she's giving back a lot to Muskoka.
She is indeed. Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so the third person that I highlighted was Rick McHale.
Ah, yes.
He grew up with an alcoholic mother, forced to witness tormenting behavior between his parents. His mother died of breast cancer. His sister dies of breast cancer. His high school sweetheart, who he marries, contracts ovarian cancer. Mm-hmm. The story of sadness goes on and
it does.
On.
Yep.
And one of his strategies to find happiness is to park the things he cannot control.
Right. Yep.
And that reminds me of the Serenity Prayer, which, you know, I just love it, and it's so applicable. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Yeah, Sue, Rick McHale was my inspiration for writing this book. Because I met him, and you just went through maybe half of the things that had happened to him, some terrible things that none of us deserve to have happen. And yet when I talked to him, he said, you know, there is a positive side to everything. You just have to accept that, or life can get you down. Seems to me that when things go wrong, human nature gets some folks asking, what did I do to make this disaster happen? Me, I say, what did I do to get this far and achieve so much? How can I now move ahead? And he also told me, that, as you just said, that he's learned to park the things he can't deal with. You know, we all get thrown problems and challenges and issues. And if we drive ourselves crazy by trying to look after them, you know, right then and there, well, that's not good. It's not going to make you happy. Rick's learned to put those things aside and say, okay, I'll get to that next Tuesday. Right now, I'm going to focus on this.
Great
smart
strategy.
Man.
Yeah. Yes, indeed.
And he is indeed a happy man, despite all the negative things that have happened to him.
Well, this has been great. You know, we're going to take a quick break.
Sure.
We've been talking to Peter Jennings, author of Why Being Happy Matters. I'm Sue Kelly, and you're listening to Sweet Spots. Welcome back to Sweet Spots. I'm Sue Kelly, and my guest today is Peter Jennings, author of Why Being Happy Matters. And Peter interviewed 37 people around the world, and it was so interesting how they all had their own version of happiness, or how they went on their journey to find peace and contentment. And one such person is Mary Ellen Ward, and had a paradigm shift in her thinking, and now believes that to be truly happy, you must be on a spiritual journey. And to her, spirituality can be as simple as noticing the beauty of nature, breathing it in, and realizing that you are part of nature, not separate from nature. She also comments that it could be about God or whatever that means to you. Mm-hmm. What do you think about the element of spirituality, Peter, in finding happiness?
Well, you know, Mary Ellen told me that she got happy because she had to get happy. She was in a very dark spot because of a number of things that had happened to her life and her family, and she was literally considering ending her own life. She decided she didn't want to do that. She hauled herself off to India to an ashram and talk about spiritual. That's where she found this whole connection and came back, and she's now a different person. She's a lovely person and a very happy person. And but she put the work in. I think that's what people need to understand, whether you're looking at spiritualism or any other form of happiness. You do have to work at it. You know, we are each accountable for our own happiness. It's up to us to take control of how we feel. And Mary Ellen Ward certainly did that.
That's for sure. And the other very interesting person you interviewed and then became the subject matter of your book, Shark Assault, An Amazing Story of Survival, about Nicole Moore. And I identified with Nicole because she is a registered nurse.
Right.
She was from Orangeville. And, you know, Paul and I grew up, bought our first home in Orangeville.
Oh, yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
wow, there is a connection.
You know what? Yes, yes. And we love to vacation on the Mayan in Mexico.
Yep.
And so tell us about Nicole's horrific journey.
Well, if your audience wants to read the book, Shark Assault, An Amazing Story of Survival, they will find that Nicole had things happen to her in her youth that most of us would never walk away from. But she's a very strong person, and she did, but the fates were not finished with her. She was in Cancun, Mexico, with a group of friends celebrating a birthday. She was waist deep in the water when she was suddenly, without warning, attacked twice by a bull shark. There are over 400 types of sharks in the sea. The experts will tell you the bull shark is the nastiest. This mean beast attacked her twice, once ripping apart her leg, secondly ripping apart her arm. She came incredibly close to dying. Sue, you as a nurse will understand when I say she lost over 60% of the blood in her body. That's a condition we as humans are not meant to even be able to survive. She had questionable care in Mexico. 5 days later, returned to Sunnybrook Hospital in Toronto, where she was near death. They were able to save her life, but they had to amputate her left arm. They almost had to amputate her left leg. They were able to save it, but she has diminished capacity. And yet, and Sue, I have to tell you, in my personal life and in my career, I've met literally thousands of people and some real top drawer candidates. This lady is right up there at the top because she is so positive, so optimistic, so hopeful, so happy, so inspirational that it was just a pleasure to write her story. It really was.
Well, and you know, some people might think, oh my gosh, I don't want to read that book. And you know, even I was feeling a little squeamish and even, you know, being comfortable in the medical profession. But I think the listeners would find the book, it is very positive. It as you said, it takes you on, you know, in depth into the different people that were part of her medical journey.
Sure.
And her life, her husband, her children. And it's very uplifting. And if you're ever feeling down, you know, you just need to think about Nicole to get right back up again.
Well, that's very true. I mean, Shark Assault, and I can't remember, I think we've got 18 or 20 chapters. There are only two that deal with the shark assault. One telling from a third person, the second story telling from the viewpoint of many people who were there. And so you're right. I've had people, I do a lot of presentations on shark assault, and people come up and they want to buy the book, and some people say, wow, I'm a little squeamish. I say, don't read chapters 5 and 6, but read the rest, because this lady will inspire you. And she truly does. She's an amazing person. And you know what, Sue? I'm better for having written the book, because I, like anybody else, will have the odd blue day, you know, you're a little down the dumps, and they'll think about Nicole and go, wow. I mean, what she's had to deal with, my life's a cakewalk, and onwards and upwards.
Do you have an engagement coming up related to?
As a matter of fact, I do, yeah, in a couple of days. June 24th, I'm going to be over at the Midland Library. They're having a gala event, and they have asked Nicole Moore and myself to attend, as well as Marina Namat, who I write about in one of my upcoming books. Marina is famous for having been abducted as a child in Iran, thrown in a terrible prison. She was brutally beaten and abused, forced to marry somebody against her will, came very close to dying, but she managed to escape. Today she lives in Canada and teaches English to writers.
Wow, I'm just getting goosebumps.
Yeah, so that's the 24th of June at the Midland Library Gala event.
I'm going to see if I'm free that day. Mm. That sounds mm-hmm. great. So what else is next for you, Peter?
Well, I'm, let me see, just about to publish my third book, which I've co-authored with Marilyn Brooks, called Behind the Seams, which details the life of fashionista Marilyn Brooks. Fascinating lady. And I'm working on two books right now, Sue, the first being Pushing the Boundaries, which I'm really pumped about. I am profiling people from around the world who push the boundaries, who think outside the box, color outside the lines. The world of sports and business and entertainment and give you one quick example. I spent a wonderful afternoon in Sarasota, Florida with Nick Walenda, who famously walked across Niagara Falls and the Grand Canyon on a tightrope.
I remember him.
Talk about pushing the boundaries. And I'm hoping, actually through an assisted ask, just trying to set up now, I'm hoping to be able to interview Mikhail Gorbachev. Love to talk with him about glasnost and perestroika. Talk about pushing the boundaries, you know. So that's one book. And then another one I'm working on is called I'll Never Smile Again. True story of a lady who wrote the song that electrified the career of Frank Sinatra back in 1940. She wrote it about her husband, who had died at a very young age, and she put pen to paper, wrote the song, managed to get it to Tommy Dorsey. He just hired Sinatra, and bang, it took off. And she has had an amazing life. So I'm working on that book with her son, Tom Sandler, better known as Tommy to his friends because he was named after Tommy Dorsey. And that's called I'll Never Smile Again.
Wow, it's so interesting. I find you amazing how you're able to tap into all kinds of humanity at different levels and in some ways that we're able to identify with or are aware of, and it becomes relevant.
Well, you know what, Sue? I'm a lucky guy because I have, I can say I have a curious mind. People might say, yeah, you are weird. But I have a great sense of curiosity. I really am fascinated by people, by life. And so while I'm presented with some of these opportunities, I'll just go, wow, that's great. Let's grab onto that. There could be a book there. And I'll start doing the research and eventually get to the point where I go, yeah, there is a book there, and start writing. So I'm lucky.
Well, and how can people buy your books or tell us about your website?
Sure. I have a number of websites. The principal one is peterjennings.me. If they go on that website, they can get directed to other websites, for instance, for the Shark Assault book at sharkassault.com, where we also show you ways of avoiding becoming a shark's lunch. And the happiness book, whybeinghappymatters.com. You can buy the book through each of those websites. And, of course, in the usual way, Amazon and Barnes & Noble and Indigo Chapters and all the usual online sources, both in digital and printed form. So,
excellent.
They're out there.
And so my final question to you is, if you were to write a letter to your 15-year-old self, what would you say?
Wow, that's a provocative question, Ms. Kelly. My 15-year-old self, I would probably tell myself to lighten up a bit. I was probably too serious as a kid, and remind myself at age 15, you know what? You do have the power to choose happiness. You can absorb the habits of others to become happier yourself, and just more greatly appreciate the things that you have, not what you don't have and you want to have, you know? So that's probably what I'd be telling my 15-year-old self.
A great lesson to learn at a young age if one can adopt that.
Yep.
I found your books very transformational, and I believe more than ever that we all have the power to choose our attitude, to park the things that we cannot change, and to opt for putting a positive frame around each and every day. Thank you, Peter, for sharing your passion with us today. I hope today's show hit your sweet spot You can connect with me at www.stillsexyafter60.com. Mm-hmm. That's still sexy after the number 60. Join me next Thursday at 10:30 a.m. for another episode of Sweet Spots. You're listening to The Bay, CKAR 88.7 on your FM dial.